We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Now, more of the John Chuckery Show.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
First entrance into the Pork Chitterlings conversation. My man, Lord Vader C, who's listening on the east side at Willie P Style. We're asking you, which of the one Thanksgiving staples is not part of your table? A lot of disrespect for green bean casserole in these streets, as noted by our good friend and colleague Ken Roundtree, who I'll get to talk to tomorrow morning. I'll be on from 10 until noon tomorrow morning, and then I will have the morning show shift 6 to 10 on Black Friday, Thanksgiving Friday, and then the usual weekend fare with you Saturday afternoon, leading you up to the Iron Bowl, and then Sunday I'll be on as well with Brian McFadden this week for the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. We gave Hugh the Sunday after Thanksgiving off. I shouldn't say we. Somebody else did. It wasn't my call. That's just the way it works. Willie P in for John Chuckery, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Hope you and yours are doing well wherever you might be listening to us, either via the radio.com app or on the air. 404-741-0929. We'll talk some Falcons coming up in about 20 minutes' time. I want to ask you a question involving them. And maybe some Georgia football as well later on this hour at 940. But before we do anything, we head to the WadeFord.com hotline to kick off the 9 p.m. hour. We talked to our friend Joe Patrick, of course, who covers the Braves, is our Braves insider for 92.9 The Game, and also one-third of the Batter Up podcast, which you can see and hear at radio.com, on the radio.com app, covering all things Braves and MLB. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Joe. Thank you so much for taking some time with me.
Oh, absolutely. It's my pleasure. It's like kind of like getting the band back together with on the Batter Up podcast, except we're doing it here on the radio. So I'm always down for that, Will. You know that.
Yeah, I know. I almost was thinking that we should have maybe done one after all the moves that we've seen made by the Braves. I shouldn't say all the moves, the two moves that they've made. And while I think you and I differed on the signing of Smiley, I am very bullish on the Charlie Morton signing. Again, only a one-year deal, very Anthopolisian, if that's a word. But to me, I look at this move and I say, here's a guy who can pitch in the postseason. And despite diminished velocity a year ago, brings a lot of upside and experience to a rotation that was sorely needing it.
Yeah, and that the velocity came back a little bit. Alex Anthopoulos mentioned that. That was kind of a flag for them. I don't know if I would say red flag, something that would totally put them off Charlie Morton. Obviously, it wasn't. But, you know, they did notice that the velocity wasn't quite there last year. But it came back a little bit in September, and they said that they really liked to see how he was pitching at that point and in the playoffs. And, you know, one thing he mentioned specifically is just that that drop in velocity was kind of caused by a lot of the chaos that ensued with the whole pandemic situation. And some players were able to take to it, like, you know, peanut butter and jelly. And some guys just, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's family reasons or whatever, just, you know, threw them off their routines. And it took them a little bit longer to get kind of back in the groove. And it's something that we talked about this season with all kinds of players, which is that, you know, there was such a small sample size last year that sometimes you get thrown by looking at just the stats from that sample. So I think the Braves, you know, the larger sample with Charlie Morton is that he's been a really, really good pitcher here for the last handful of years at least. So he's going to be a huge asset for the Braves coming up this season. And they're, you know, got to give Alex Anthopoulos credit. He's gone, you know, made no mistake in going right back to reinforcing that starting rotation, which is already one of the strong suits with at least the guys you had lined up at the front of it, and now you've got real depth there.
I don't like any time a signing is made that I have to be sold on it a lot. I feel like that was the case a lot with Smiley. But I also felt like, you know, I'll take a step back, I'll see what else they do, and then I'll evaluate the Smiley signing. How much better does that signing look now, factoring in the addition of Morton?
Yeah, I definitely think it looks better, to your point. I will say, and we, you know, as soon as the signing went down, we started talking about it in our text message group, you know, just kind of deliberating whether we thought it was good or not. And I think that I didn't really know. Obviously, the money that was paid was a little bit over what the market price was for a guy like Smiley. But what Alex Anthopoulos said that really kind of impressed me was just how long they've been kind of going after and targeting Smiley. He said that they, the Braves and Smiley, discussed a contract before the 2020 season because they liked what they were seeing with him coming back from Tommy John. So I think that with Smiley, they've got a guy who potentially has a lot of upside. He's 31, I think, but he doesn't have a ton of innings on his arm, you know, especially recently. He's kind of a more of a fresh arm for a guy his age. So I think you've got a lot of different kinds of profiles of pitchers now in the starting rotation. You've got young upstarts. You've got a guy who's kind of like Max Fried, who's kind of making a name for himself in the National League. And you've got now a couple experienced guys, one in Drew Smiley. And then, of course, Charlie Morton's probably going to be kind of the veteran leader of that rotation. So I think you've got a really nice mix of guys there. And it's the Braves are lined up that right now have one of the best starting rotations in all baseball.
I was going to ask you, where does that place their rotation now? Because at one point last year, we were down to like one guy. And yeah, you know, while they put it together and quite honestly fared a lot better than I think even the most optimistic Braves fan thought that they could, I feel like other than maybe the Dodgers, I don't see another rotation in baseball that can boast not only the firepower but the variability that this Braves rotation can bring to the table, especially when you factor in the young guys.
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing, to your point, the fact that these guys are young, I think that this Braves rotation, not only is it kind of set up right now as looking like one of the best in baseball, but there's a lot of upside for all of these guys. You know, like so Mike Soroka is probably a guy we probably shouldn't place too much expectations on. We know what he can do, but just coming off the injury, you never know. But I still think there's room for a guy like Max Fried, despite the fact that he had a great season last year. I think that we're going to see even better from him next season over the course of a full season. And then you've got young guys that we've been talking about for a long time. We'll get to see a full season of Ian Anderson. I think there's a lot of upside for this group. And I think some of the national media members have talked about the downside for this group. But, you know, it's really hard for me to see some of these guys regress. Like, just knowing how professional they are, Max Fried, Mike Soroka, Ian Anderson, these guys are not going to take anything for granted. They're going to continue to work hard and be the humble guys that got them to this point. So I think that there's a lot of room for upside, and I think that you have to say right now that it's looking like the best starting rotation, at least in the National League right now.
Talking with Joe Patrick, our 92.9 The Game Braves insider, on the moves the Braves have made and the ones that could be to come. I think, Joe, if you and I can concede, priority next would be the Freddie Freeman extension. What is next after that in your mind in terms of what exactly the Braves need to do? Is it Ozuna, or is it at least the backup plan for Ozuna?
Yeah, right. It's either Ozuna or insert impact bat that I don't know what it would be off the top of my head, but you know, it may not even be a free agent signing. It could be some sort of trade. You know, they could flip some other assets if they need to go out and get a bat. But I do think that is definitely going to be a priority for this team. And it's quite clear. Like when we've had conversations with Alex Anthopoulos after both of these signings, both with Smiley and Morton, you know, the press is asking, okay, well, what about, you know, what else are you going to do in free agency? What else are you going to do? And it's been kind of surprising because of how the Braves have gone about these signings, with them happening so early. I think when we last spoke on the Batter Up podcast, we were talking about how we were expecting this to be kind of a long, drawn-out process. And I do still think it's going to be that way. It just so happened that these two guys that the Braves have been targeting that they've signed here recently just so happened to kind of things lined up for them to be able to make those deals and get them done early. But I don't think that's really indicative of how this free agency period and the offseason is going to go. I think that we still have a lot of time to wait out because for many reasons, like Alex Anthopoulos keeps saying, there's so much uncertainty, not just with how much money teams are going to have to spend when they're projecting out what their sales figures are and all that kind of stuff. We don't even know if in 2021 we're going to have a DH in the National League. So there's still a lot that's going to be decided. And I think that winter meetings will, you know, I think we'll have a lot of more clarity by that point. But I think that an impact bat is for sure going to be on the Braves shopping list.
Yeah, I think a lot of teams, too, are waiting for that December 2nd non-tender deadline to also make decisions, because they're probably going to be an increase in non-tendered guys, especially those guys who are up for arbitration. One of those guys could be Chris Bryant, depending on whether or not the Cubs want to bring him back for that additional season. He's a name that's obviously been bandied about in trade talks as well. You kind of touched on it a little bit, but I wanted to stop down. What did the money spent by the Braves tell you about their financial wherewithal? Does it tell you that there's more money in the coffers than we realize, or does it tell you that those are their big spending numbers this offseason and they're not going to spend that much more?
Yeah, you know, it's funny it almost felt like, to me, Braves fans, when they saw these numbers of the signings that were made, like, oh, this is it. This is all we're spending. But hold on, let's hold our horses on that. There's still time. We don't really know for sure, but I think it can't be taken as anything other than an optimistic sign that the team is already willing to go out and spend this money this early in the offseason. And the team knows the kinds of things that they need to get done when we're talking about whether you're going to be signing Ozuna or you're going to go out and adding payroll, you know, through somebody else. They know that that's still out there that needs to get done, but they were still willing to spend, what, $26 million, a little bit over $26 million on these two starting pitchers to shore things up. And it's not, you know, there are guys that the Braves could say, oh, you know, they could have not spent so much money and said, we trust Bryce Wilson or something like that. But they didn't do that because they knew that it was a real need for them. So I think it can't be taken as anything other than an optimistic sign that they've gone out and spent this money as they have so far. But again, I think it will be a little bit more drawn out process until we start to see some of these other signings come through.
92.9 The Game, Braves insider Joe Patrick joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. You mentioned that the Braves, at least as part of a goal, want to try and acquire an impact bat, whether that's Ozuna, whether that's a name that we don't know, that remains to be seen. If that impact bat is not a starting lineup bat, say it's a bat off the bench or somebody who is going to be a DH that doesn't have the impact that Marcell Ozuna did for them last year, can that roster put together enough offense to get back to a divisional title and to the reins that they reached in 2020?
I think it can because of the starting pitching. You know, we've been talking about how strong the starting pitching unit is, and I think it's going to be a stronger unit over the course of next season than it was this year, where you had to give the Braves a ton of credit for advancing as far as they did. And especially just even making the playoffs after everything that happened to them. And it was that all happened because they had the best offense in baseball. They might not have the best offense in baseball or in the National League or maybe even in their division next year, but I really think that combined with what they have, and again, I, when we talk about the offense as well, you know, we just saw Freddie Freeman win an MVP, and no surprise or it's no coincidence that that was his first year where he's played after he had his surgery to remove bone spurs that he's been dealing with for years. So I think we're going to continue to see an elevated level of Freddie Freeman, similar to what we saw this year. And again, he was battling COVID the beginning of this year as well. So I think the Braves lineup is still fine, but they're definitely going to want to add a bat. And maybe the opportune time will be if they aren't able to get a deal done with Ozuna, maybe you add somebody at the deadline or something like that. I do think that it's a solid lineup, but clearly, if you want to talk about this team being a World Series contender, which we all think they should be, you've got to go out there and add a real power dynamic bat like Ozuna brought to the team last year.
JP, I know you took some time away from family to have this conversation, so I'll let you get back to them. Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Lippy, for having me on. You too.
That's Joe Patrick, the Braves insider for us at 92.9 The Game, and also one-third of the Batter Up podcast. We probably will break one more out this week, at least one that runs in conjunction with the winter meetings once the Thanksgiving holiday is all said and done. But great stuff, a lot of stuff to react to. We'll do that a little bit here next, and also get you a Falcons flyover, getting you ready for Falcons and Raiders. Dante Fowler back. Does it help them enough? The pass rush certainly not existent against the Saints. And taking our first look at this Raiders club that comes into the Benz this weekend. We'll do that a little bit next. Willie P in for John Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com.
Now, more of the John Chuckery Show
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's time to talk all things Dirty Birds. It's Falcons Flyover with John Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
John Chuckery Show continues. Willie P in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I did want to at least update the college basketball going on currently. It's a heavy tilt at the Pavilion. Georgia Tech 15, Georgia State 11 in the intercity matchup. The two Atlanta area-based Division I schools. Michael DeVoe has six to lead Georgia Tech in the early going at the under 12. We'll keep you updated on that as we go throughout the evening, if you'd like. Got a couple other games going on. Interesting ACC-SEC matchup right now going on, looks like in Florida, between Clemson and Mississippi State. Clemson has the lead there, 33-28. But we'll talk some football here with the Falcons. We get ready for the Raiders. Look, I'll come out and admit it. I didn't think that the situation involving our guy, I'm having a hard time putting it into words what we saw at the quarterback position for the New Orleans Saints with Taysom Hill. I'm just having a hard time putting that into my brain because it just did not compute. There was nothing we had seen to this point of his career that showed me that he could do what he did against the Falcons. Now, even in retrospect, did he do anything that would be marked as spectacular? No. But he provided a dual threat. He was able to take advantage of the fact that the Falcons still had a hard time covering people, which, again, everybody's back on the defensive side of the football in the secondary with the exception of DeMonte KZ. I know that they don't have a lot to go with the pass rush. When you're starting Charles Harris, Stephen Means, and Jacob Tuioti-Mariner, I know it's not exactly a stout defensive line. Wasn't what you thought you were planning on this season. But the fact that you could not get any real push and the fact that you made Alvin Kamara a non-factor in that game, if you would have told me Kamara's a non-factor in that game and you hold Taysom Hill to under 300 yards, I feel like you win that football game. But too many offensive insecurities, too many sacks, 8 sacks is inexcusable for an NFL offense. And not only for an NFL offense, but for a unit where offense is where all the money is. I say this all the time. Follow the money. All the money is on offense. Between Ryan and Julio, the offensive line, you're going to have to pay Ridley at some point too. You spent money in the offseason on Hayden Hurst and Todd Gurley, and yet this is what we have. It's unfortunate. And it also comes after a bye. Raheem Morris talked about how frustrating and how unfounded it was to struggle as much as they did after an open day.
You know, it wasn't a how physical game. I thought the physical game for us was really there. You got a couple of really good knockback hits by our defense, knocking people back. Julio catching that drift in the middle of the field, absolutely low on the shoulder on the safety, being physical early in the game. I think what they did a better job at us is coming out dictating terms in the second half. You know, when they got that lead, we went for that Hail Mary at the end of that half right there going into it. I told the team at halftime that this game would come down between third downs. And what I meant by third downs, it meant owning possession, and it meant absolutely getting off the field to give more turns. They came out, they had a great job, a great plan on third down for us. You got to give Dennis Allen a lot of credit for what he was able to do in that third down situation. I think they really limited us, which we were in top 10 in third downs. And coming out of that game, we were no longer in the top 10 because of what they were able to do. And those things changed quickly. The dynamic broke down for us, and we were able not to get back into that game in order to try to win that thing.
That's Raheem Morris on the coach's show talking about how much New Orleans dictated the terms. And that was something, honestly, that I said was a key going into basically every game for the Falcons, is that it is a rarity that we dictate the terms. I feel like our biggest issue is that we let the other team dictate the terms and then play off of that. If you spend your time playing that way, you're not going to win a lot of football games. And whether he can't impose his will on this team or if this team is just not talented enough to make that happen. There's some sort of disconnect there. And again, that was the biggest problem under Dan Quinn. And I do feel like a lot of the sheen that was on Raheem going into that game was taken off. And again, the two losses that Morris has, I think you can pinpoint coaching as being a very big part of that, not just from him, but the fact that offensive coordinator Dirk Cutter just did not seem to understand how to adjust to what the Saints were doing. And again, they weren't doing a lot of stuff that was complicated. A lot of it was just man-on-man beating them and bringing more numbers than they could handle. But even still, when the numbers favored the Falcons on the line of scrimmage, they were still giving up pressures. And they came out and said, between Cutter and Morris, that three of the eight sacks were on the offensive line. That means the other five were on Matt. So, to me, you got a significant disconnect in where exactly this offense needs to be run between the coordinator and the quarterback. And again, I thought the reason that we brought Dirk Cutter in here was because he has such a rosy relationship with Matt Ryan. Nah, apparently. Also, speaking of offenses, going to see a pretty good one coming into the Benz on Sunday with this Las Vegas Raiders outfit. A rather underrated squad, in my mind. They certainly put up some numbers on Sunday Night Football if you watch that game against the Chiefs. Raheem Morris on having to stop Derek Carr and the Raiders O.
You know, they're doing really well on offense. You know, Derek Carr, you got to start with, you know, some of the things that he's been able to, his control of the offense, some of the things he's been able to do at the line of scrimmage, you know, well documented as far as how he has control of everything and what he does and when they do it. Those guys have got some really good weapons around them. You know, the young man from Clemson playing slot, doing a great job inside, and Waller's doing a great job. You know, all those guys, they got a really good running back from Alabama. You know, he's been able to go out there and do some really explosive things. And Aguilar's just found a new career out here in Oakland. Has been really dominant. You know, I got the rookie Ruggs who can really run and take a top off. You know, all guys that we're very familiar with, has been recently in the draft class. They've done a great job of drafting. You got to give those guys a lot of credit.
It's funny how John Gruden was a laughingstock when he got to Oakland, and now they're in Vegas, obviously. But he's developed not only as the head coach, but working as a co-team builder with Mike Mayock. The two of those old school football guys who were laughed at when they were brought back to that organization have brought some competence to that organization, which, again, I don't think is anything that a lot of people were predicting happening. And they're a team right now that sits in a pretty comfy position right now at 6-4 in what is one of the toughest divisions in all of football, the AFC West. They'll be coming in here trying to dictate the terms against the Falcons. I talked about the situation involving Raheem Morris. One of the interesting debates that's been happening is what exactly is going to happen with the general manager situation with regards to the Falcons. We've seen some of the candidates start to get released online. One of the big ones that was talked about going into the weekend was the former Texans executive Rick Smith. And while he does have on his resume as having drafted J.J. Watt, Deshaun Watson, and DeAndre Hopkins in that organization, I don't know if you can necessarily give him credit for all of those, because those guys were slam dunk picks at the time. It was more of just you made the competent decision to do so at that time. Again, I don't like Rick Smith because I do feel like he had way too cozy of a relationship with Bob McNair, especially there in the end. He got a lot more chances. I feel like that would be a Dimitroff kind of clone, and I feel like you want to stay away from that. I more want somebody who is taking this job on the ascent. I'm not necessarily looking for somebody who's been a general manager before. So a guy like a Champ Kelly, who is the assistant director of personnel with the Bears, I'd prefer that. Somebody who comes from that background, the scouting background. He's currently, obviously, with the Bears. He's been with Denver under John Elway and was a regional college scout for them. I prefer a guy like that. Even a guy like Brad Holmes, who obviously has Atlanta connections with his time with the Hawks. He was the director of college scouting for the Rams, somebody who's been cited But even a guy like Reggie McKenzie with the Dolphins, I don't know if I want somebody who's a current sitting GM or has been a GM before. I'd much prefer a coach with experience than I would a GM with experience. Because a guy who is a GM, I feel like it's better to go without a blueprint there. And because of that, I do feel like that person can take the kind of ownership of a job that a guy who's previously been a general manager might not be able to take. Still, a lot of people are asking whether you hire the GM first or the coach first. I asked somebody, speaking of the Raiders, a prominent former NFL executive in her own right, member of the other pregame show on CBS Sports, Amy Trask. I asked her over the weekend, does it matter who gets hired first, the GM or the coach? She says she doesn't think so.
I agree with Rich entirely. And I will tell you, of all the years Rich and I worked together, there were times I agreed with him, times I disagreed, and I know there were times he disagreed with me. In this instance, I agree with him entirely. You know, I don't buy into the whole you've got to hire the GM and let him bring in his guy. Why do we expect less or accept less out of adults like a GM or a head coach than we expect out of children? When we have children and we throw them in a room together, whether it's in school or on the playground or otherwise, we say, find a way to get along, find a way to work together. I don't care who is hired first. If I'm the owner, I say, you know what? Find a way to work together. And if either of you come to me and say, you've got to pick one or the other, I'm picking neither of you. Be grown-ups, find a way to work together. I don't care who is hired first.
That's from my weekend conversation with Amy Trask, and I'll get to what you said about Raheem in a moment. You have to put in mind, this is before the blowout loss to New Orleans, but one of the things that we did talk about is the fact that Raheem is going to get an evaluation period that's longer than most interim coaches get. He's going to get, again, an 11-game slate to go off of, but even so, Amy believes that you can't judge him solely off of that because he's walking into existing infrastructure that he had no control over being able to change.
He hasn't had a chance to build the infrastructure that presumably he would wish to build in the offseason if given an opportunity for the full-time job. In other words, if he were hired last March or last February, he would look at the coaching staff, he might make changes, he would look at, as you said, wipe the slate clean. He hasn't had a chance to do that, and all I'm suggesting is that when the evaluation is done as to whether to keep him full-time long-term or not, he needs to get some, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, extra credit points for that. There needs to make an adjustment in the analysis for that because he didn't get to wipe the slate clean.
Now, one thing I will say is that his continuing insistence on Dirk Koetter as the offensive coordinator of this football team is a tad unsettling if it's just you and me talking here now. I feel like he has worn out his welcome, or at least worn out his usefulness, if you will, with regards to his time with the Atlanta Falcons. But the last thing you want to do is blow an offensive coordinator situation in the middle of the season. They did get rid of the special teams coordinator, which is usually the easiest position to change mid-season because you can move somebody over. They put Will Harriger up there into the spot that Bernie Parmalee ended up vacating at the running back position. They put Parmalee in at special teams and moved some other things around in order to accommodate the departure of Ben Kotwicka. Problem, though, that I find with this whole situation is that any real remnant of the past, to me, has to go. And I feel like more of that is evident now based off of the way they looked against New Orleans. We were sold on the fact that this team looked different. All it really came down to, guys, is the four teams they played in the weeks after Dan Quinn's dismissal were bad football teams. And you still lost to one of them in an embarrassing fashion that can be blamed. Mostly, I would say 75% of it can be blamed on inadequate coaching. So that's a strike against Raheem. I feel like Raheem can be a good coach, just not with this organization. And that's the Falcon flyover for a Wednesday night here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Falcons and Raiders on Sunday, 1 o'clock. You'll hear the pregame coverage with the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. Myself and Bryant McFadden will join you at 9. Chris Goforth, Harry Douglas have you from 11 until 1. West Durham, Dave Archer with the call, 1 o'clock at the Benz, Las Vegas, and Atlanta. We'll do some college football next. I want to get into some Georgia talk. Yeah, they went to JT Daniels, and it looked great. Now what? Of course, Kirby Smart having to answer some very tough questions about that. I'll tell you what I think about the situation involving Georgia and the rest of their season as they get ready to take on the Gamecocks of South Carolina. Willie P is in the building for John Chuckery on a Wednesday night, the evening before Thanksgiving, on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com.
Going on over in Lawrenceville. Hey man, Mike Bell here from Dukes and Bell, and every weekday at 3 we do our NFL Blitz, where we go around the league. It's not just Atlanta, baby. We know there's people from all over, and we give you the takes on the big stories from around the NFL on Dukes and Bell.
Willie P is in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, in for John Chuckery. Hope you're enjoying yourself today. Brown Liquor Music Hour is still to come in the 10 o'clock hour. If you missed our conversation with Hawks beat writer for The Athletic, Chris Kirshner, we'll replay that for you coming up at 10:20. Also going to get you back into what's happening. We'll give you a full scope of what's going on in Atlanta. Still have the kicker to come as well. We'll talk some Georgia football right now. I was telling myself earlier that, And by earlier, I mean before Georgia's game against Mississippi State on Saturday night, I was telling myself, look, you know, it's going to be one of two things for me with regards to the situation with JT Daniels. He's either going to look great, which is going to tick me off, or he's going to look inadequate and not ready and or tentative and or hurt, which is going to tick me off also. So I was perfectly ready, mentally ready to be otherwise ticked off by anything I saw from the Georgia Bulldog quarterback in that game. Now, I do feel like one thing is being conveniently ignored with all this talk about the quarterback. Despite the injuries, and again, the LeCount thing is a freak thing, so you can't pin that at the feet of Kirby. And I know Jordan Davis has been in and out of the lineup as well. But this defense ain't it, guys. I mean, this. I understand that in 2020, we've seen offenses, not just at the college level, but at the NFL level, have a historic type of clip here. They have not been the kind of enforcer that we're used to seeing on defense. And it's taking a very sobering track right now for Kirby Smart, because you saw it latter part of last year it started to kind of go by the wayside too. And I know a lot of people looked at it and said, you know what, this defense was not as good as we thought it was going to be. But I feel like even this year now, when they were healthy, you had issues. Like people forget, you have 41 points to Alabama. And again, I know Bama's got all those receivers. Mac Jones is playing probably some of the best quarterback of anybody in the SEC and by extension all of college football. But letting that unit on Saturday for Mississippi State with a backup quarterback and diminished scholarship numbers basically do what they want offensively is a crime against humanity. So I mean, before we talk about anything involving JT Daniels, we have to acknowledge that this defense has not been the truth this year. Far, far from it. Now, I understand that maybe we, and I say we, me and my colleagues in the radio business and the media, probably obsess over the things that come out of coaches' mouths a little too much. I'll admit it. I'll freely admit it. We try to take what we get from coaches as gospel. And when they are coy or secretive about things, it kind of gets us ticked off. So when Kirby Smart tells me at the beginning of the season after the Arkansas game, JT Daniels is cleared to play, I take him at his word. Because when have I ever thought that that man is going to lie to me? Well, it's not that he lied. He just withheld the whole truth with regards to JT Daniels. Now, again, we had heard that the rehab was taking a lot longer than it really should have. And I find it interesting that Roddy Nabulsi, who was on earlier today with Andy and Randy, and he's been on this along with Mike Griffith of Dog Nation. Both those guys have been very, very keen and keying in on just how murky the quarterback situation was the entire year for Georgia. But the one thing that Kirby Smart admitted to God and everybody on Saturday night was that we kind of were a little devious about the way we talked about JT Daniels. And Roddy, early today on Sports Radio 99 The Game, said that it basically was what they'd been reporting all along. JT Daniels was not ready to play quarterback for the Bulldogs until he took the field against Mississippi State last Saturday.
JT Daniels was not ready. That's what we've been hearing on the inside, was that, you know, he just wasn't quite mobile enough. And you saw him take three sacks, and the running game just dies when your quarterback can't run. So Kirby basically, I don't want to say came clean because that just sounds like he was being deliberately misleading, but he had to come out and say, okay, here's what the real story is, guys. He was not ready to go. He was not healthy. He did have some knee issues. And you can second guess me all you want, and you guys can tell by the tone of that post-game press conference, he hates to be second-guessed, as all coaches do.
Right.
But that came on him. You know, don't spend 3 weeks telling me that the kid is completely healed. He's not wearing a knee brace. He's fine. The other two guys are better. And then come out and say, oh, by the way, yeah, he wasn't healed.
That's Roddy Nabulsi on with Andy and Randy earlier today. And look, we all kind of bought into it. We bought it hook, line, and sinker. And Kirby was kind of defiant there at the end of his press conference Saturday, and even a little bit also going into the game by saying, look, guys, he gave us the, you know, do you know how long I've been doing this? And, you know, I don't like being second guess type thing. But here's the problem is that I feel like, and again, probably this is, again, us taking more stock into what he actually said as opposed to the actual result. But if Kirby had just said, hey, he's not ready, then I feel like a lot of the ire and a lot of the angst kind of goes away. Not all of it, because at the end of the day, it still matters what you do on the field. And the conversation shifts from why is JT Daniels not on the field to why are we so unprepared at this position? Now, again, give Kirby some credit. Newman opts out, completely unforeseen. Fromm goes to the NFL. I think something none of us really foresaw happening. You could probably argue that it was probably the wrong decision, despite the fact that he did get drafted and is making money. I feel like maybe he could have bettered himself to a point where instead of holding a clipboard, maybe he actually has the opportunity to compete for a starting job, but he's in a situation with a young quarterback in Buffalo that he's not going to get past. I'll tell you that right now. Josh Allen's the franchise there. And maybe his entire career is a career backup in the NFL, but I feel like he could have maybe gotten more out of his final year of eligibility than he got with the years he spent at Georgia. But again, that decision has long been over from the Georgia standpoint. But I do feel like what we saw from JT is everything we were promised. Competence, the ability to move about the pocket, not necessarily he wasn't statuesque, but he wasn't somebody who you run the read option with either. But I do feel like he brought a sense of calmness to the position that Georgia has not had all year, even with Stetson Bennett when he was playing well. Because there was still a bit of a frenetic nature when it came to Bennett because he wasn't somebody who took care of the football. Here's Kirby in his press conference getting ready for South Carolina talking about the improvements JT needs to make off of his first start with the Bulldogs.
You see him make good throws. I think his mobility is not going to do anything but hopefully improve. his decision making and those, the things are, the people around him got to play well. He's got to get a run game around him to help him in order to reach his full potential and things like that.
I also wondered, because again, with all these quarterbacks, and again, I think there are some things you do with DeJuan that you wouldn't have done with Stetson or JT. I feel like there are some things you can put on JT's shoulders just because he has the experience to be able to handle them because he has the experience. Again, he doesn't have as much of a, and again, he has more game experience than Stetson, but Stetson has been in this offense longer. But I do feel like there are things that JT can recognize that Stetson can't, just because he's seen more games in his career at full speed. Yet, despite the fact that Kirby seems somewhat happy with the scenario right now, he says they really didn't have to change a lot or move a lot of the mountains on Todd Monken's side of the football to suit JT Daniels.
I had the same game plans we've really had with the other quarterbacks in terms of, I think everybody likes to make a big deal, especially in the media profession, of how much is quarterback control and how much is offensive coordinator. The game plan is set up to where you have run checks, you have pass checks, you have flexibility on protections to redirect things. Nobody really is different in college football in terms of that. Some quarterbacks can handle more than others, and JT is not going to be, we're not going to be limited by what JT can do. We'll be limited by what we can do with our offensive line, our tight ends, our receivers and backs, because for everything you do with JT, they have to be able to do as well.
So Georgia has three games left on their slate. This week against South Carolina, the Vanderbilt contest, and then whenever they replay or are supposed to play their game against Missouri. Again, it's currently ticketed for the 12th, could possibly move to the 19th, depending on Missouri's schedule, because they've got a couple of games that they have to make up, too. And again, with Georgia not being a part of the college football playoff, they are being part of the SEC championship, they have the ability to play on the 19th if need be. But what does this mean for the next 12 months of Kirby Smart at Georgia? They've solved quarterback, I think, in a lot of people's minds. You do get Brock Vandegrift in next year. I feel like a lot of the pressure now is off of him to have to play right away. Now, he could come in the spring and win this job outright. There's certainly a lot of room for that. But I feel like anything that was involving the future of this quarterback scenario that didn't involve JT Daniels, or if Daniels was a flop, that was something that I think people were going to look at and say, you're a little bit nervous. That makes you a little bit nervous. Now, something that was talked about earlier is consider the opponent, Mississippi State. And again, I don't know if we're going to get a full indication as to what JT Daniels can do based on what's left on Georgia's schedule, because South Carolina is without two of its top defensive backs because they've both opted out. Israel Mukwamu, who had three interceptions last year against Jake Fromm in that upset victory, and J.C. Horn, both no longer with the Gamecocks. Vanderbilt is Vanderbilt. And Missouri, defensively, not exactly a strong stalwart. So I do feel like, at the end of the day, we're still going to have questions about J.T. Daniels going into 2021. But I feel a lot better about him now than I did before last Saturday. It is the John Chuckery Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P. in the building here with you. Brown Liquor Music Hour coming your way next. We'll get into what's happening. We'll talk some Hawks, and we also have some interesting stories to talk about in the kicker, including an update on our poll question. Which Thanksgiving staple have you never eaten, refused to eat, is not on your Thanksgiving table? One more hour to play. Willie P. with you, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.